Well, this great left-hander was discovered by the Mets in the most unusual way. He was Mr. Clutch in the postseason, and he once owned the final out ball from the 69 World Series, Jerry Kuzman. It's a big thrill. Welcome to Glad to Have Met You.
Well, thank you very much, and hi to all the fans in New York.
Well, I know that they all still love you, to say the least. Let me start with this. You know what my lasting image is of you pitching from when I was a kid, Jerry? And I caught you more toward the tail end with the Mets, but you would sweat a lot during your starts, and Bob Murphy on the radio or on TV would always describe you as taking off your cap and mopping your brow. I would imagine you lost a lot of weight during games, no?
I did. I was a free perspirer, and I had a kidney infection when I was 5 and darn near died from it. And to cure it at that time, they didn't have the drugs for it, so they'd sweat it out of you. So I was in the hospital for 5 days being covered up with steaming hot quilts, and that was torture. But ever since, I was an easy free perspirer, I guess. And the most I lost in the game was 18.5 pounds.
Wow. Yeah, because you would stretch out on a hot, humid night and take the cap off and kind of just, you know, extend your arm before you wiped your brow and then put the cap back. It was kind of a routine.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can still see that vividly. Well, I alluded to this at the top, Jerry. I'm sorry.
Just a comment on that. On those hot, humid nights, which I hated, hot humidity, but I would just really suffer for the first 4 innings when the majority of the water in your body, or the extra majority, would leave your body, and I'd just be wringing wet. And of course, I changed uniforms some nights, you know, 2-3 times.
Wow.
But once I got that a lot of that water out of my body, then I would cool off and so-called get my second wind, and I felt great.
Yeah. Well, I alluded to it at the start. You were discovered initially by the Mets by the son of a Shea Stadium usher who actually saw you pitch in the Army in Texas. How about that?
Well, he was my catcher. His name was John Lucchese, and he is my catcher down in Fort Bliss, Texas, there in El Paso. And he caught me a lot, and he told his dad, and I guess his dad told the Mets, and they sent this Red Murph down to see me.
Well,
so it was kind of a freak way of scouting at that time.
Yes, indeed, to say the least. And then another wild story from early in your career is that, from what I understand, when you were in the Mets minor league system, they were actually on the verge of cutting you in 1966, but then minor league executive Joe McDonald, who later, of course, became Met general manager, he said, well, hang on now. Jerry owes us a few dollars from when his car broke down, and we gave him some money or lent him some money. And so I guess Joe wanted to make sure it got paid back, and the ledger was clear. And I guess you managed in that short time to change their minds, huh?
Well, what happened was, Jerry Wild, Jerry Johnson, and myself were leaving Atlanta to head down to spring training. And since Jerry Wild was from that area, we said, well, you drive first. And he was driving my brand-new Pontiac Catalina. And we get to Athens, Georgia, which was, I don't know, 90 miles south of Atlanta. And he kind of hustled up to get a green light. Well, it turned red, and we got hit broadside by a school teacher. She was coming home from going home for lunch or something at noon. Well, that totaled my car out. So then we had to figure out how we're going to get down there. So we decided that whoever had the best record was to call up Joe McDonald and ask for money, transfer bus money. And so they decided I had the best record, even though mine was poor. In 65, I was, I don't know, 7-11 with a, what, 5-something ERA. Well, I called, and Joe wired us $50 so we could get the bus rides, down Greyhound, down to Homestead, Florida. Well, in the meantime, I spoke to my dad on the phone. He figured I needed a car, so he said, go out and get another one, and he sent me money or to the bank so I could buy another car. Well, so anyway, we ended up buying a car and driving down, and so I didn't have the cash to pay Joe McDonald back. So that was his story. That reason they kept me is I owed him $50. But I don't think that was a good story, I think, for the press. But what really happened was Frank Leary was our minor league pitching coach, and he taught me the slider that spring, and I threw a few of them, and I just kind of smiled. I said, nobody can hit this pitch. He said, you're right, not the way you're throwing it. And so Clyde McCullough took me with on his A-ball club to Auburn, New York, and I had a great year, and the next year is in the big leagues.
All right, so that's the real story, embellished by one that maybe isn't quite so accurate but makes for a good tale, as you said, right?
Yeah, and I never really argued with Joe McDonald about it, but I'm sure that was on the back of their mind because, you know, Joe was in charge of watching the money.
Indeed. The Mets were watching the money even back then, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course, you're best known, and we'll touch on it in a moment, for your great performance in the 69 postseason, particularly in the World Series. But what people may forget is in the 69 National League Championship Series, when you guys sweep the Braves, even during a Met win in that series, you were hit hard one game. How did you manage to kind of shake that off and then turn things around so dramatically against the Orioles the next round?
Well, we went into Atlanta, and we knew they had an excellent ball club, and they had really good pitching also. So we figured it was going to be a pretty much kind of a pitching duel. Well, we get down there, and none of us pitchers on the Braves or the Mets did very well, but the hitters took over. Our hitters scored more runs than we ever expected, and the hitters carried us through those playoffs. It wasn't the pitchers. We got knocked around, but there it was. It was hot down there and, you know, uncomfortable for us. And anyway, the World Series starts, and then, of course, the cool weather set in, and, you know, we're like bulls, you know, when that cooler weather comes.
And so, really, it was a completely different story, of course, for you and the Mets against the Orioles, where the pitching did again take over as expected. And by now we know all too well what you did in that series, Jerry. 6 no-hit innings and 1 run and 8-plus innings overall at a 2-1 win in Game 2. And then you're down 3-0 in the third inning of Game 5. You wind up with a complete game victory in that one, and you become world champions. And I'm wondering, to have been so clutch on the biggest stage there is, what kind of a source of pride has that been for you all these years since?
Well, it naturally it is, but I don't dwell on it. I always enjoyed this toughest competition. I mean, I had the privilege of looking back, knowing that I faced the best there ever was. And so to have that opportunity, that's great for a young guy to, you know, better look back on. And I wish, you know, and I know it's not possible, it'd be great if everybody had that opportunity. But, yeah, it was a great joy and, a goal fulfilled to be able to pitch in the big leagues against the best there was.
And speaking of which, those Oriole teams, of course, in that era were among the best there were. And you managed to upset them in that 5-game series. As you look back now, celebrating the 50th anniversary, has your perspective changed at all? And by that, I mean, over the years, certainly it was considered this huge upset back then. How do you view it now? Is it the same or is it any different in any way?
What do you mean by upset?
Well, I guess maybe to you it wasn't an upset. I mean, you guys were the underdogs according to most.
You're referring to the World Series.
Yes.
Yeah, we were the underdogs. I guess we were the underdogs all year. We'd never played that well. A year before, we'd finished in ninth place. And then divisional play come along, and I think that was to everybody's advantage, not just ours. But we gelled, and the reason we gelled is because of Gil Hodges. I don't think we could have accomplished what we did with any other manager. Gil was absolutely the brightest, the best, and it was great playing under him. He had one set of rules. We all towed the line, and we all did our jobs, which is that's all he expected of us, be ready to do your own job. And, I give all the credit to Gil, and he was able to manage and get the most out of us.
And of course, those sentiments have been echoed by many of your teammates exactly the same way over the years. How about Game 5 against the O's, Davey Johnson with the game-ending fly to left caught by Cleon Jones. And the story is that Cleon eventually gives you the final out ball. You hang on to it for years and eventually sell it. And so what happens to it from there?
Well, it was normal practice to give the winning pitcher the last out ball. And so that was just common. And so I had it for a number of years. And finally, someone came along and offered me a price that I said, well, you know, rather it's sitting in a box in my house, let them, you know, eventually display it or whatever. And I sold it.
And so what happened?
I'll pay for some of my college, my kids' college education.
Sure, why not? And so what happened to it from there?
You know, I don't know. I haven't kept track. And whoever bought it from me, I don't remember who it is or where it is or what they're doing with it. I haven't searched for it.
And do you have any inkling in the midst of that crazy celebration in 69 when you're given the ball by Cleon that one day this is going to pay for some tuition?
No, I had no idea. I've got, you know, I've got a lot of baseballs that were, you know, game-winning balls. And in minors, I wrote on them, you know, how many strikeouts, how many walks, and et cetera, what the score was. And then when I got in the big leagues, I didn't do that very much anymore. You know, there's a few I did. I think I did for my, like, my 1,500 strikeout or, you know, something like that. But I got all those balls in a big box. And one of these days, I'm going to go through there and try to sort them all out.
That must be some box indeed. Well, Jerry, a couple of other questions for you before I let you go. You, of course, were such a great 1-2 punch with Tom Seaver, pitched together with the Mets for around a dozen years. And I know you've said that you guys knew each other so well that you would actually serve as each other's pitching coach of sorts, right?
We did. We did know each other very well. And I could tell if Tom was a little off and what his problem was. And a lot of times when you're out in the mound, you don't know exactly. You feel like your mechanics are right, but it helps to have an outside coach, just like all the golfers do today. And so if he was struggling, he would look in the dugout, and I could just point to one, whether it was leg or shoulder or whatever it was, and he could immediately correct it because we'd talk about those things. And I'd do the same thing with him. And it just was sometimes just a little bitty adjustment, and then we'd get back into our good rhythm.
Of course, Art Shamsky recently released his book about those 69 Mets, in which a big part is devoted to the visit that you and he and some of your other teammates had with Tom just a few years ago when he had started to have memory issues that have now been well publicized. Can you tell people, Jerry, about the friendship between you and Tom over the years and maybe give us an update on how he's doing now?
I tell you, that's an excellent book called After the Miracle. It's one of the best books I've ever read, but it does really give you some good insight. I mean, I learned some things reading that book that I didn't know about the players on my own ball club. So it was really, it's captivating. Yes. But anyway, we went out to see Tom, and the reason for that trip was, you know, they were writing this book, and they wanted to hear the stories of us all together. So it's Sabota, Harrelson, myself, Art Shamsky, and Seaver. And so we had a good time out there, and we Tom showed us around the vineyard. And of course, we talked baseball. We went out to lunch, had a couple bottles of wine, and talked a lot of baseball. And so it was fun. But Tom, you could see there was, you know, a little bit of dementia setting in because, you know, sometimes he'd repeat the same story again. But it's sad. And Buddy Harrelson was going through the same thing. And, you know, as we age, we don't know what lies around the corner. But we certainly feel for each other.
I'm sure, because that bond that you guys have 50 years later, final question for you, just to kind of pick up on the point you just made, Jerry, you guys have gotten together various times over the years to celebrate that season and that era. But knowing now that it's 50 years and you guys are getting older and many of those guys are gone already, does that put a different special note on this, knowing that in some cases you might not see some of these guys ever again?
It sure does. You think, I don't know how many are gone, 7, 8 have gone, and there'll be now 2 or 3 that won't be able to be there, or maybe 4 won't be there. I don't know. But, yeah, we're getting older. We know we're not going to live forever. And some of these guys I haven't seen for 30, 40 years. So it'll be great to get back and reminisce, and we'll be just like our old selves. We're not going to compliment each other. We're just going to start digging on each other like we did in, 69.
The old needling always picks up as though it were yesterday, right?
Yeah, that's what makes us feel at home, and that's what makes us united. That's how we were a team, and that's how we got along. We survived. We're a family, and we know each other's kids. It's going to be fun to see. Certainly, we won't recognize each other's kids because it's been so long now. They're all well in adult years.
Well, Jerry, just hearing the sound of your voice brings back so many memories for myself and countless others. Enjoy the big weekend. I'm sure it's going to be great for you guys and for everybody watching. And really, a big thrill to talk to you. And thanks so much for joining me here on Glad to Have Met You.
Well, thank you. And it's going to be great seeing the fans again and hearing their hollers.